Hey y'all! As promised, here's our mini-episode on the identity crisis in music therapy that Dr. Webb mentioned in episode 3. And just for fun, you get my thoughts on the matter as well. Don't be afraid to let your voice be heard. We'd love to know what you think too. Details on how to get in touch are at the end of the episode. So pull up a chair and drink it down. Here's part 2 of our chat with Dr. Adenike Webb.
Can we talk about you talked about the identity crisis you see in music therapy right now. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because now that's got me curious.
Sure. So you want to know what I think is our identity crisis?
Yeah, I would love to.
I kind of feel like we want to be everything to everybody and prove we're just as worthy at being at the table as the other big dogs, so to speak. Like, we want to prove to the doctors we're just as scientific and methodical and systematic in our approach as they are. And we want to prove to the established psychologists that we are just as theoretically grounded and based as they are. And I think sometimes in trying to fit into those worlds, we sort of lose sight of the fact that, well, because of the music, the art component, which sort of in some ways defies categorization into like a scientific sort of approach. We're cutting off piece of who we are, you know, because we can be all those things. We don't have to fight to limit ourselves to fit one way of being. We don't have to be some strictly scientific, medical sort of oriented thing. And we don't have to be some strictly scientific, psychological based something, because the music component comes in and sort of, I don't know, sort of like melts over all those different things. So like we fit in multiple worlds. Maybe we don't inhabit all those worlds fully, but we have pieces of all those worlds that make us up. And I feel like we try so much to justify our existence in like the healthcare world, because, well, yeah, we want to be reimbursed for our services, of course, rightly so. And we want our clients to be able to afford our services and get access to them. So I understand why we have these pushes to kind of define ourselves a certain way. But I think we have to be careful in doing so. I don't even know if I have like a solid definition of music therapy anymore, you know? I think my definition keeps expanding. I see myself as a music therapist, as someone who is trained in the use of music to to kind of support people in seeking wellness goals, however you want to define that wellness. I see myself as facilitating opportunities to engage in music that support well-being, you know? And that can look differently to many people, but I don't think it has to be defined that it must, you know, I don't think it has to look a certain way or not. And with our identity crisis, I feel like we're always trying to prove we belong, like we have a right to be here. Well, we do, by virtue of being an art-based field. And arts has been intrinsic to human nature since the beginning of recorded time. We have a right to be here, you know, by virtue of people's experiences with music and knowing the effects that it has, we do have a right to be here, you know? We don't have to argue for that. I think like we just have to learn to accept ourselves as being medical, psychological, scientific, and artistic. We are all that. And that's okay if people don't get that, you know? We don't have to justify our existence to others to have worth.
Yeah, so almost taking it back to like the pure humanness that's found in everybody.
Yeah,
because that's kind of the part music works with, music hits, music comes from. And like, that's just there because we're human.
Yeah. I mean, all the arts, I once took an introduction to art therapy class and, oh, I can't, I think the text we were using was by Judith Robin. I can't remember her last name clearly, but she was an art therapist who actually was one of the art consultants to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood back in the day. Like, she did art with him on his programs and stuff. And she had an interesting quote that stayed with me, was the idea that the arts, I mean, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it before me, but in fact that the arts are our way of being uniquely human, you know, like all the arts, music, dance, poetry, visual art, like it's drama. It's been part of who we are, and it distinguishes us from other life forms on this planet, you know, and the fact that it has persisted throughout the centuries shows that there is some intrinsic value to it. And the fact that people who engage in these things note differences in themselves, whether it is a social difference or an emotional, psychological difference, you know, it's being involved in the arts has value. So to take this involvement in the arts into the targeted area of health and well-being makes perfect sense. And maybe it doesn't fit the way the doctors see it or something else, but it doesn't discredit the fact that what we are doing as creative arts therapists is valid and valuable.
Wow. It's almost like going back to like the very beginning of our profession and being like, we got lost somewhere along the way trying to use music as a tool or as an intervention. And like, we got kind of away from like the art piece and how people engage in art.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, maybe it is a developmental thing. Like, maybe we're kind of like in our teenage years, you know, so to speak, where we're trying to figure out who we are and we want to be seen as adults like others and taken seriously. And maybe in the next 50 years, we'll kind of move into that adult space where we're like, well, I have a clearer sense of who I am. And, you know, eventually we'll be that adult who feels, you know, at ease in their skin and who knows who they are, you know? I think we can get there.
I have this nagging fear in the back of my mind that, like, we're at a crisis right now, and if we don't figure it out, music therapy is going to disappear as a health profession.
Or oh my just gosh. Just
a profession in general.
Have you been hiding out in my head?
I just worry sometimes that, like, with all the stuff that's happened at, like, national conference and with like all the ways we're trying to justify ourselves and separate ourselves, but like, I don't know, sometimes I just worry that like we better figure it out, otherwise
yes I agree with you. I think we're at a turning point, you know, like it's getting, if you want to be scientific, what do they call it in chemistry, that critical mass point, you
know, like I have no idea,
like, you know, that point where like I don't know, like if we're hitting that point where if we don't make a good decision, like you said, yeah, I feel like we'll become irrelevant. I agree with that.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I agree with that. And I think on like the last conference was such an eye-opening thing for those who were present in like the assembly meetings and some and the affinity gathering that the Black Music Therapy Network hosted. Like, you could see that there's a movement beginning to bubble among people where we're like, we can't continue the way we were. You have to listen to the previously unheard, to the marginalized members among us. We have to, who are representing some of the marginalized clients we serve. Like, you have to listen if you want to stay relevant, if you want to have any significance in this world. Like, this is a time of reckoning for us, and we need to make sure that we are making good decisions and connecting with the resources that we have and the people who are there, but who are always overlooked. It's time to stop overlooking them, you know? So I think that's what this last conference kind of brought to the forefront for me. It was like, we have so many amazingly gifted, powerful, resourceful LGBTQ members, Black and Brown members, Latinx members, disabled members, and I'm sure I'm forgetting another group, but who we have so many members who come from marginalized groups within our field who are scholars who've been reading and writing on issues that have great impact for our field, who have been working with clients who are also LGBTQ, Black and Brown, disabled, and have insight to share with us so that we can be more culturally responsive to the clients we serve. And it's time to listen. It's time to listen so that we can really be authentic humans engaging in authentic relationship.
Ooh. Isn't that what it all comes down to?
Man. Yeah.
Authentic humans engaging in authentic relationship.
Yeah.
Wow. Ooh. So cool. I just get so excited about, I don't know, music therapy this way, because this feels so authentic and so right and so the way to move forward. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why I like being a music therapist.
I mean, not to say that everything that came before was totally awful or something. Like, some things worked for a while, obviously, you know, but they cannot continue because they're not working the same way anymore, because times have changed, people have changed, and we need to be responsive to that, you know? So there was some value in some of the practices that we used, and maybe some of the practices we used, we should have never really gotten into them, who knows? But that, you know, in order to stay relevant, we have to adapt, and this is a time to adapt.
This is a time to adapt. This is something I've been thinking about for a while now as I've started working as a music therapist. It makes me worry when I see things like the Sound Health Initiative from NHS, and from every Facebook post I see of music therapists calling into question other professionals' use of music. It feels like we don't know ourselves and are letting other people define us. Our national organization always seems to be one or two steps behind the current trends, and it feels like we're always reacting to new ideas and theories rather than developing them and putting them forward. I think it says something that there are over 8,000 board-certified music therapists in the U.S., but according to their website, there are only 3,900 members of the American Music Therapy Association. Now, what exactly that says, we can probably argue about all day. But thinking about what happened at National Conference last year, I think there's a good number of music therapists that are feeling disaffected by AMTA, and that they haven't been keeping up with the needs of our modern, diverse profession. Under the Frequently Asked Questions portion of their website, the answer to "What is the future of music therapy?" is:
the future of music therapy is promising because state-of-the-art music therapy research in physical rehabilitation, Alzheimer's disease, and psychoneuroimmunology is documenting the effectiveness of music therapy in terms that are important in the context of a biological medical model.
That's it. One sentence. And focusing on a biological medical model at that. A model that we know can only capture a small piece of what we do, and maybe not even the most important piece. I feel that our profession is in danger of disappearing if we don't figure out what makes us unique and stick to it. We're not behavior technicians using music as a reinforcer. We're not psychoanalysts using music as a screen for clients to project on. Or at least, I don't think we should be. I think we should focus on why people are coming to music in the first place. On why we keep coming back to music in our daily lives. Music is an incredibly unique and powerful medium that we've all had some profound or important experience in. Otherwise, we wouldn't be music therapists. Otherwise, we wouldn't be listening to that song over and over again. Otherwise, we never would have stuck with learning that stupid guitar that caused so much frustration because I can't play the goddamn bar chord. There's something about music that goes beyond reward, projection, neurology, physiological response, cognitive thought process, what have you, that gets to the core of who we are as humans. Carolyn Kenney says, "Words can never go deep enough into music to touch her essence." And I wholeheartedly agree with that statement. Music at its best defies explanation in words. In one of her writings, she describes a clinical vignette about a group singing experience. After the music, she wanted to talk about it and kept asking one man how he felt during the song. This man either couldn't or wouldn't answer until finally another group member said, "Lady, if he could say it, he wouldn't be singing it. And doesn't that just sum it up? If we could say it, we wouldn't need music. There's something more in the music. Music is more than the sum of its parts. Maybe that's why I'm drawn to more music-centered theory and the role of indigenous theory and methods, like Carolyn Kenney's field of play, the Bonney method of guided imagery and music, and Nordoff Robin's music therapy, the ways of working that come from the music itself and work through the music. I think these are the ways of working that will continue into the future and present the best of what we as music therapists do. And to be clear, I'm not saying that other ways of working aren't meaningful or beneficial, because goodness knows I'm not a Nordoff Robbins trained music therapist, nor a fellow in the Association for Music and Imagery. But I do think that we should seek to align ourselves with more music-centered ways of thinking and working, even if we have to speak about it in other people's terms to make them understand. We, as music therapists, need to be working, thinking, and speaking about music therapy and music and healing in ways that are authentically ours, doing things other professions can't. That's where our future should be. But there's another facet of this identity crisis we can explore. Music therapists are facing a reckoning with the fact that our profession is more than just straight, white, cisgender women. Let's look at the numbers. These statistics come from the 2018 AMTA Workforce Analysis. Although non-AMTA members are invited to complete the survey, 1,400 out of 1,800 people who responded were members. This makes it difficult to know exactly how representative these numbers are, but we'll work with what we've got. So, 87% of respondents to the survey identified as female, 11% as male, with the remaining people identifying as transgender, genderqueer, or other identifier. 88% of respondents identified as white, 4% as Asian or Asian American, 3% as Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish, 2% as Black or African American, 2% as multiracial, and 0.3% as Native American or Alaskan Native. Unfortunately, we don't have numbers on how music therapists identify in regards to sexual orientation, which seems like kind of a big oversight to me. Nor are there any numbers on disabled music therapists, which also seems pretty important. So, for a long time, music therapy has been dominated and continues to be overwhelmingly straight, white, cisgender women. As a fun little side note, although most of the profession is female, a startling high percentage of music therapy faculty are men. The goddamn patriarchy. Anywho, we are now seeing an increase in previously marginalized voices speaking out and demanding to be heard, which to me is a wonderful thing, and there's so much for me to learn. However, this can also be a scary thing because it means acknowledging our levels of privilege. It means admitting we have caused harm. It means giving up the idealized notion that we can be all things to all people simply because of our desire to do good. The more I've listened, the more I've come to realize that wanting to do good is far and away not enough. It takes humility, a willingness to listen and to learn. It takes work to educate myself about my own biases and to continue to seek out opportunities to learn more about the things I'm ignorant about. As Dr. Webb and so many others have said, the work never ends. And luckily, there are so many wonderful people out there willing to help educate us. So tap those resources and find trainings and writings and workshops. But I always try to remember that being a good ally means knowing when to keep myself out of the conversation too. And it's not the job of everyone I meet to educate me. This leaves us in a weird place as music therapists. Our scope of practice is so large. I mean, really though, that certification exam? Far too broad. It almost feels like we then have to identify ourselves by subspecialty. I work with autism. I work in mental health. I'm a neurologic music therapist, and so on and so forth. I don't know if it comes from a place of needing to feel like an expert in something, or because there's so much variation in the field, or what. However, I don't think that this diversity is necessarily a bad thing. I think there's a great beauty and power in diversity. But that means we all have to find a way to get along with each other and to find a common way of speaking about our work amongst ourselves so we can understand one another, so we can be authentically engaged with one another. Authentic humans in authentic relationships. That's what it comes down to, I think. I wish I had all the answers. My life would certainly be much easier, but I don't, so I just have my thoughts, and it's my podcast, so you get to listen to them. All this reminds me of the first episode in the interview with Nancy Jackson, where I asked how music therapy had changed over the years, and she said,
Don't you mean, have you seen music therapy evolve and change over the years?
I've been pondering this for a while now, as a young professional, since I've only been practicing for 2.5 years. So I thought I would turn the question to you, dear listeners. Has our profession changed? How have you seen it changed? Do you feel like we're in an identity crisis right now? Share your thoughts with us via email, mtpodcast@gmail.com, or DM us on Instagram, @mtpodcast. If you use Anchor for your podcast, you can also send us a voice message. Let us know what you think. Let's start a conversation so we can start navigating the future together.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This episode was hosted by Tony Boykel, produced by Nathan Sheets. Original music composed and performed by Nathan Sheets and Tony Boykel.